Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages. Happy October to those people who like this month. Tomorrow, I will go in depth as to why I am not a fan of this month. So today, I'm going to stay away from all of that because that's an episode that deserves its own story and its own self. So we'll answer those tomorrow. But tonight, you're tuned into this one. So what I'm doing right now, I'm just sharing this link one last time on Instagram. And then you can also find it on the Twitter as well, my official. But tonight's show, if you can't tell by the title and by the memes or the pictures, if you would, this is a very interesting show, and this will be one that will raise a lot of eyebrows, I'm sure. And first and foremost, what I want to do first of all is thank my wife, who we just celebrated our wedding anniversary just this past week. So again, happy anniversary to her. Over the summer, we had a conversation as we are preparing to do multiple things like moving and multiple other things. And we were watching something, and the subject of ghosts came up and hauntings and, you know, so forth. In our family, we all like horror movies and so forth and whatnot. And also, something I don't talk a lot about is something that I don't share with everybody. A few people have, I've only told a very few amount, very select amount of people that I have. The thing with most people call clairvoyance, I guess is the term they dubbed us. But first and foremost, before I go heavily into it, I want to thank my wife, and you guys can thank my wife for giving me the idea to do this, because she felt that it was important for me to come and do either the YouTube on or go on my YouTube channel or come on my podcast and tell people what it's really like to experience ghosts, what the real story is, what it's really like to be clairvoyant. Because I think so many people sensationalize it, and so many people have it wrong. And there are so many people out there who just take advantage of people who desperately want to believe. And then there's the other side of the spectrum of the people who do not believe and refuse to acknowledge it at all. So thanks to my wife, and it being October and all, I thought this would be an appropriate time to bring up this conversation and to talk about this. And again, this will be a very interesting subject, as this is not something I will go on and on about from shows to come. But one of my favorite films of all time is a movie by M. Night Shyamalan called The Sixth Sense. And in the film, for those people, what I'm going to not do is put in spoilers. But I mean, if it was out in 1999, and in 2000, it was nominated for the Oscars. So I'm sure that by now you've heard of the movie. If you haven't, you should see it. So I'm going to try to get around the spoilers. But basically, give you the premise, the young protagonist, if you would, played by Haley Joel Osment, Cole Sear is the name of the character. He is someone who has the, quote, sixth sense, in which he can see and communicate with dead people. And as the timeline goes, he sees dead people. And one of the things for me that I thought, one of the things that drew me to this movie that I thought was so endearing is the fact that that's pretty much how it goes. And I think that's something a lot of people who, the supposed ghost hunters, the supposed people who want to find the answers. I think one of the issues with a lot of these different things are like ghosts and other things. I can't speak to everything as far as other myths and monsters and things like that. I can't speak to a lot of that because I haven't seen a lot of that stuff. But what I can tell you is I'm a person who has to see it to believe it. I am also someone who tells it how it is. I'm blunt, honest. So what I'm going to be sharing with you guys is my own personal accounts and from my own personal experience as someone who, like Cole Sear in that film, can actually see, communicate, and talk with dead people. But what I also want to do is kind of talk the facts of what it's really like to do that. Because I think a lot of people at first, because there have been a few times when people have asked the question, and those people who I have said or have told that, yeah, I can actually talk and see and whatever, that not everyone else can. First and foremost, that's the opening to this. Now, let's bring you back into, first of all, clairvoyance is not something you can learn. I know there's a person who is teaching this online somehow, and there are a lot of people out there who believe they can learn how to do this. And I have to tell you, from my own personal thing, is I don't believe it's something you can actually learn. I think it's something you have to kind of be born with, or at least a touch of it, and then you have to develop it over time. Because honestly, dealing with being actually clairvoyant and actually being able to communicate with and being able to do the things in which I can has been something that has been plaguing me since my birth. And that's the first thing I want to kind of divulge, is the fact that a lot of people view being able to communicate with the dead, being able to read people, quote, is a good thing. It's not always a good thing. Being able to see and communicate with the dead people is, for a young kid, there's really no difference to an infant, because infants are just learning their ways. Small children, the same thing. They're just kind of learning their ways into the world. So they are more acceptable, if you would, to they're more a little bit more acceptable into communicating or to, indulge with the entities, if you would. And before we go, I want to point out, as far as, what I believe as far as religion goes, I know this is probably going to upset a lot of people, but I have to be honest with you guys, due to the fact that my lifetime and everything I've endured in my honest belief, I can't support this. I do have a hope that, obviously I want the best in life, and I do believe that things happen for a reason. That I do believe in. I do believe in the fact that miracles happen every day. I believe that too. Do I believe in, a certain, kind of a heaven-hell kind of a thing? That I can't really speak to. And I'll tell you why. And this is, again, this is from my perspective, because I've been dealing with a lot of these things for most of my life. And I'm not going to trash religion. If you're people who believe in, God and whatever religion, and that's okay with, you can respect, I respect that, because I'm F4L. And I do believe that I respect people who believe in whatever it is that helps them get through whatever they need to get through. If someone needs to believe in something else to get them through hard times, to make sense of things, that's on them. And I don't have an issue with that. Me, myself, I believe in actions, and I believe in people, and I believe in karma, if you would. So there you go. There's that. So some things you can't explain, kind of like you can't explain why bad things happen to good people, which is a common question people have when someone we really care about, something tragic happens. We often think, why did this happen to so-and-so? There's so many bad people in the world. Well, I think a lot of that is perspective, as far as who the person is. How many people know who this person is, and, and all that. And I think it's unfortunate when things happen, because when someone passes away and someone, dies in a sense, I think it's comforting to think they're going to a place like heaven or if they're an evil person, to view them down in a place called hell. If that works for you, that works for you. For myself, and seeing what I see and knowing what I know, I have a hard time believing that, in fact, such a thing is a thing. And the reason being is, one, I can see a lot more people than there are actual people in the world. You see, when you're a young kid, as I began this, you really can't tell the difference between who's alive and who's dead, because you're so young. As a small child, you can't really tell maybe someone, if someone's nice to you or how someone's talking with you. It could be someone you've known for years. It could be someone you've known for a little bit of time. I think it's very common and cliche that, you know, a lot of the times parents will hear their children talking to things that aren't there, that the parents themselves cannot see. And here's the thing about that. I don't think everyone is actually able to do, is able to kind of see all of those things, because I don't think everyone's equipped to. The reason I say this is because sometimes the things in which and the spirits and whatever you want to call them, I'm going to call them spirits, I guess. I guess we'll just call it like that. But I don't separate people to ghosts, I guess. I think ghost is a nasty term, and I think ghost is disrespectful to the people that they are. So why don't I just call them people? because to me, there's no difference. As I've gotten older, I can definitely tell the difference now as I'm older. But as a kid growing up and having to deal with these things a lot, you know, there was really no way of definitely knowing back then. Now, I had said before that my memory was tested, and it had. And it had been tested many times in my youth, and I did remarkably well for my long period of remembrancing and so forth like that. And my long-term memory is phenomenal. I remember somersaulting out of the crib very vividly. I remember my aunt and my mother telling me my uncle had died. But I didn't remember him, per se, until he reminded me who he was years after he died. So what I'm going to tell you guys is this, and I'm not reading from a book, and I'm not going by any kind of statistics. I'm just telling you what I have learned in my 41 years of being able to see, talk to, communicate, and whatnot with the people who seem to not be around for everyone else. Spirits, if you would. Again, I'm going to call them people because they are people, regardless what their living state is. And when you're F4L, you honestly believe that your friends and your family live through you anyway. You kind of accept them into your heart anyway once they're F4L. So that love for them and that compassion, that caring for that person never really goes away. So I like to, the way I look at things like that is by the more you, you know, talk about those people and you talk and you share the memories with the people you love with other people, the memories live on, so will they. There's an old quote, and I actually put it in here, that heroes are remembered, but legends never die. That is a quote from a very well-known movie from the 90s. I'm sure you guys all know it. From The Sandlot, actually. But it is very, very poignant, and it's very, very real. And that's kind of how it goes. So what I'm going to do now that I've told you that, now I want to point out also, I don't believe in people being able to go out there and, I'm going to go on this side of the room and call out a bunch of names and letters, and this is going to be, you know, I'm looking for an S. It doesn't work that way. And this is going to upset a lot of people who are making money on this, because I'm going to tell you the facts. See, here's the thing about someone who is clairvoyant. It is true that you are a beacon. I heard someone refer to that earlier. I was doing a little research today for this. The research I did wasn't to kind of learn, because I have had to deal with him multiple times. What I wanted to do is find out what, you know, people believed, so I can basically, you know, kind of correct or right the wrong, so to speak, or make some clarity things. That's kind of where it is. And someone had called it, you know, being, it can refer to themselves as a beacon, someone able to channel in all of these entities. That's kind of true. I think that people, whether they're living or dead, they know if someone can, in fact, communicate with them. They know when someone is acknowledging them. And I can tell you, for the most part, what a lot of people don't know is that, from what I've seen, everyone who I've encountered, I'm not, I don't want any guys to freak out and stuff, but here's the reality. From what I know, everyone around them has at least five to six people around them at all times. That's not something I know because I've seen them. They are people who are internally close to that individual. I'm not 100% on always knowing who's going to be who. I don't know who's moms, dads, aunts, cousins, brothers, sisters, but unless they tell me, you know, the non-living people, but I'm not going to be one to walk up and say, oh, you have 70 dead relatives around you, because one, that sounds ludicrous. And two, it's a little, I would feel if someone walked up to me and said, oh, there's, you know, seven dead people around you that you probably know, and I'm going to sit there and tell you all their names and describe them, I don't think that's helpful. I think that the reason why there's so many people out there who try to make money on this kind of a thing is because people want so desperately to communicate with those people who are not there so they can see. The first thing I should probably tell you guys is, most likely, if you have people who are close with you, usually the closer, the better, they're most likely already with you, or they're watching after you. Now, as far as someone who can say, oh, you know, let me go here and find out what you want to know, being clairvoyant doesn't work that way. Excuse me. Being a beacon is true, where you can, you, any entity that knows that they can talk to you, kind of like people, you know, how many people have ever gone to either a subway or whatever, if someone wants to get your attention, a living person, you have your headphones on. You have your headphones on because you want to either listen to music or you're busy. Maybe you don't want to interact with the person for whatever reason. You want your privacy, whatever, and someone's trying to get your attention. Now, clearly that person is there, but you're not acknowledging them because you want to see if they'll eventually go away. That is kind of how it works. But you can't just walk around and say, hey, I want so-and-so to come talk to me right now. That's not how that works. I don't know how, what the, I can't tell you what the, you know, travel life is for a non-living person anymore. But what I can tell you is that for the most part, they're very local. No one's going to go very far anyway. They stick to what they know, and that's comforting to them. For the most part, they're around the people they care about because they want them to know they're there sometimes, and sometimes they don't because they know it would freak them out, which is understandable. Now, for me personally, I'm going to take you back to sometimes when I was younger, when I started developing, or when I started, not developing, I was born with it. And the reason I say you're born with it, it's not something you can learn, is because it's something that I've been having to deal with since I was in the crib. I remember talking with people who were not there. My grandma, you know, years later, I would talk to my grandmother about a woman who I would talk to in the room all the time, and she would tell me that was her mother, but I couldn't be talking to her because, you know, she was gone. And the other thing about it is that it sometimes can be genetic. My grandmother, as well as some of my aunts and so forth, have been also sensitive to other things. We call it sensitive in our family because my wife, who, by the way, is not related to me by blood, also has the ability to feel them. She knows when something's there and whatnot. And my kids have some slight things too. It's just something that you, I believe it is, has to be into the genetics. It's just a matter of how much you develop and how much you want to work with it and how much you want to kind of go with it, I guess. I don't think it's something you should profit off of. That's the first and foremost thing, because I don't think it's a, I don't think it's a gift as much as people say it is. A gift is something that you want. A gift is something that, you know, someone cares enough to say, hey, here, take this. You might enjoy this. That's kind of what a gift is. But what this is non-privacy for the rest of your life when you're clairvoyant. I want you to understand that. And I think one of my frustrations comes from people who, when I tell them, well, yeah, I can see when they're around, I can see what's there, but then they think it's a great thing that I can see these dead people and all these things, and they go into how awesome that must be, and it's really not, because it's really tragic. Because as we all know, not just older people die, young people die, older people die, and people who we don't even know can't understand their languages or whatever, die all the time. And when you're clairvoyant, there is no window. There's no separating a person to a non-living person. For me, anyway, or anyone who's, I don't really know if there's any other real clairvoyants out there than my family, I guess, because I know this is something that my family, as well as my grandmother, my mother, and my aunts have all expressed these things have happened with them. So this is a family trait. This is something that is genetic, and this is something that is transpired. At least I can talk about our family. I think a lot of it is easily can be seen as intuition, right? Serious intuition. I came, as you guys know, from a very tragic upbringing. I came from a non-loving family for the most part. I was raised by my grandmother until I was about 4 or 5, and she was Irish right off the boat, and that was because my mother was so young when she had me. A lot of my early sayings I learned are from my grandmother. My grandmother, I also mentioned in a prior episode, was the reason why I was able to step getting into martial arts, and she was responsible for me getting my black belt even years after she passed on, because she knew that would be important for me and she knew that would bring me to new levels of, you know, whatever. Now, as far as a lot of the things a lot of people believe, contrary to belief, as I said, it's not a gift, it's a curse. There's no privacy for me. But as I got older, I am able to put the boundaries in my own self. You cannot, I heard someone earlier say, when I was doing this research, I want to hear what other supposed people say. I want to hear what other people, if there was anyone else like me who could relate to the reality of what it is to be clairvoyant versus what they can read or what they can do research on. Because there's a difference. So I made a few lists of some things. I don't really write these shows out because in wrestling, when I do the fitness center, which was my talk show in wrestling, I didn't have a promo script. In fact, in wrestling, I never used a script to do my promos. They told me how long I had. I went out and hit my mark and kept it moving. So I don't usually keep notes, but this one I wanted to make, I just took a few of the leading questions that people have. So what I'm going to do is address these and we'll go from there because I think they're important points. Each of them have certain things within them. It also keeps it a little bit more focused for people. Now, as I already mentioned, I'm going to tell you some stories from my youth, and then, you know, we'll go from there. I just told you about how I would talk to my great-grandmother on a regular basis, and I talked to her till about 5 or 6, and because I was so young and I didn't know what a ghost or a spirit or a non-living person was, and because I seen them and my grandfather and everybody else like anything else, so I didn't see any difference. People I didn't know, it was almost like a train station, really. at our house. So it was all kinds of people there. So I just figured it's a big party house. But I never asked until, you know, my actual grandmother who was living at the time would, you know, show me a picture. So, oh, that's, she came last night. Where is she now? Or I'd say, you know, when's she coming over to visit? What time is she going to be here? Because she'd be, you know, because a lot of people believe that, you know, spirits will stay at the same place or whatever. And that's not the case either. There is times when they venture out and sometimes they come to visit and sometimes they don't. You don't have a say in it, which is one of the biggest issues I have with the people who's claimed to be. There is no on and off switch. You can just choose whether or not you want to indulge or you want to respond, I guess you'd say. For the most part, I do when I can. If I can't, then I won't. But, you know, obviously my great-great-grandmother, I'm not going to, you know, not talk to her at one point when I was younger. But when I realized that, you know, my grandmother, and again, my grandmother and my mother and all that stuff, that was nothing unusual for them. They knew I was talking to a spirit or a ghost for most people, but I didn't know that. But people outside would look at us like we had three heads because, you know, how does he know that? How is he describing her? He's never seen a picture and he's only five. But that's how that goes. That was one of the early things. The other thing I had starting in the young days, it's something I used to like to call black and white dreams. Now, this is not one. I did say also they did a dream test on me back in the day when I used to tell my, you know, doctors and everything that I could alter my dreams within the dream state. And the doctor said, the doctor said, there's no way to do that. It's impossible. And after doing tests, and of course, this test went all over the place because a lot of people reported this and they come to find out years later by science, the same science who discourages and also doesn't agree with ghosts or hauntings and so forth. They did find that it is in fact a possibility for, it is a thing that person can alter their dreams within a dream state. So there you have it. The doctor that told me that learned that from a doctor who trained him that it wasn't possible. He read that in the book. So that's going to bring me into another point a little later on. But the black and white dreams are something I still have, but they're not often. Black and white dreams don't happen on a regular basis because normally I would dream in color. Those are my normal dreams. That would happen, and sometimes I've written stories off of those, or, you know, the very delightful dreams or whatever. But those were always in color, but then there are those certain dreams I'll have that are in black and white. These dreams I can't alter. I don't have the ability to alter them. They just happen. It's like watching a movie. It's kind of like someone like myself who has post-traumatic stress disorder who has a flashback, if you would. But I'm watching it, but I'm not there, but I know I'm there. I'm watching this as almost like a person in an audience kind of a thing, right? This is in the dream. And I'm aware I'm dreaming, but I'm aware it's in black and white. Now, years later, as I'm older, I realize I got to pay attention to those more often because now that I'm older, some of those are more precise. One of the earliest cases of this being kind of one of the things that was surprising to me. And when I realized how strong what I used to call friendar was, that's what I used to call the thing where I could just feel that someone is in trouble and something that my family calls, they know if I say, hey, I got the friendar going off, I know something's wrong. Because I do. I get the feelings that something's going to happen or something's going to go wrong. And because I have so many F4L all over the place, I never really know which one it is or who it is. But I know there's a problem somewhere and I can feel it. And it happened almost all the time. But fun fact, this is actually a really cool little story where it's not such a scary thing, but it is kind of a nice thing about the black and white dreams anyway. So I was a teenager. And as you guys know, I was living on my own. I was living in a group home kind of a thing for teenagers because I left my home when I was 15. And obviously, I didn't have my own apartment until I was 17 or so, 17 or 18, I got my first place. But I was, you know, in a group home with a bunch of other kids who also had similar situations. But I had a dream one night. It was a black and white dream. And it took place, I could tell that it was in April. I could see the calendar as I walked out the bar, or the person walked out of a bar, got into a car. It was snowing out, and they hit a tree, and they died. It was a black and white dream. So at that time, I was probably about 15, probably then. Yeah, I was about 15 when I had that dream. And it didn't have any meaning to me because I don't drink or drug or anything like that, nor do I really care to hang around with people who do such things, to be honest. I know people who have, and that's their choice, but I'm not overly indulgent above it. But I didn't know the person either in the dream. There was a man. I didn't know who he was, but I seen everything go on. So that was interesting. And then fast forward to second week of April of 1996. And those people, I live in New England. And of course, one of the biggest sayings in New England is, the region I live in is New England. And what they say around here is, if you don't like the weather in New England, just wait a minute, it'll change. Because of how obscure our weather patterns could be. And prior to this, usually, you know, winter starts, you know, summer is pretty much, you know, starts, you know, pretty much, what, right after June. June, summer is pretty much here. And that'll carry over till fall, which is usually sometime in September, October, technically. And then in December, winter. And then winter will carry you to spring. And it was spring of 1996, and the darndest thing happened. There was a snowstorm on April Fool's Day, which is April 1st. That I remember. I remember trudging through snow, and we got a huge storm. It was a huge storm on April 1st, and around here, snow didn't fall after mid-March, and this was the first big snowstorm we've ever really seen. And it wasn't just a snowstorm. It was a blizzard, which we usually get in the winters here. There was, you know, very high, you know, snow mounds everywhere. The weather wasn't great, and it was this bad snowstorm. Well, as I said, that was April 1st was when the storm took place, because I remember they called off school. We had a trip. It was me and the other members of the group home I was in, we walked to the center of the city. Because stores were still open, but, you know, schools and stuff were closed. So we walked to the center, going over the, you know, snow mounds and everything else. Nothing new for us here. But, you know, 2 weeks later, this kid came in, and he was kind of, you know, a little bit above my height, maybe a little skinny, and very hyper, very energetic. You know, he came in for a tour of the facility, of the group home that I was in. And I remember they asked me to give him a tour, which I did. And I came to talk to him and stuff like that. He ended up coming to live in the house with us. And, well, he'd go on to found the F4L with me, one of the original founder members of the F4L. And what made it so surreal is about the time when we were talking about the F4L, and we would often make jokes about how we're long lost brothers, because I never knew my dad. And he would said, well, he just lost his dad. And I was surprised by this, because I had said I never had a dad. And he said, well, I just lost mine. And that led into the story and led into this conversation. And, well, long story short, which has already been longer than it should have, but turns out his dad was involved in an accident on that April 1st snowstorm. His truck had hit some black ice. He had been drinking, went into a tree, and died. I dreamt of the person who would become my F4L brother's dad's death. I felt a little guilty at first. I felt really upset because I had seen it happen prior, but I didn't know him yet. I didn't even meet him yet when this happened. And 3 weeks later, here's this kid telling me exactly what I saw in my dream. 3 weeks ago, or a couple months ago. Because I remember I had that dream way before I knew him. I had that dream when I was like 15. And, yeah, I was still 15 because my birthday's in March. So, yeah, I would have been 16 when I would meet him finally. So that was one of the first kind of profound things I realized. These black and white dreams are getting more kind of vivid, if you would. As far as, you know, entities coming and talking to me, or as I like to call them, non-living people come around and talk, whatever, I'm used to that now. I'm not overly liking it all the time. But what I've also come to learn is, for the most part, the people who are around me are people who I care about or people who I am fond of. This is going to be a story that'll be one for the ages, I'm sure, for people. But see, I had told you guys this. I had began this episode. I told you guys about an uncle who I remembered being. I remembered that my aunt had told me my uncle died, but I don't remember the uncle per se. I couldn't really remember him. But I remembered my aunt, my mother telling me he died, and they were upset about it. I was not even 1 year old yet, but I was talking because I was an early talker. And as my grandmother would say, I started talking early and haven't shut up since. But anyway, it was one of my grandmother's famous things. Anywho, what ended up happening was years later, I had ended up moving back into my grandmother's house. My cousin had lived in the apartment. I took a room off of her. And this is kind of what led me into kind of being on my own, because I realized my family is not going to be there because my grandmother told me that. What I was doing with my family, as I mentioned before, is not supportive people. They're not like me. They don't believe in the F-World models. But as I was in what was my grandmother's house, I was in a room, and because it was so long since I had lived in that home, I wasn't in that room anyway. My room was in the back, which was where my mother's room was. I still remember where my mother's room was, but you know, this room was where the living was off to where the living room was. In fact, I think this room was built after the fact, but anyway, when I first moved into that room, I was just staying in the room and whatever. And at night, you know, it'd be a man who would come, who was not the very nicest man. But as soon as he would come, my grandmother would come in. And now my grandmother had died when I was 13 years old. So we're talking about a man who had passed away when I was not even 1 year old coming. And what he would do is come and be kind of vindictive. And he was kind of not the nicest guy in the world. He tried to scare me. Unfortunately, I don't get scared that often because of the fact that I've seen just about everything there is to see anyway. And because real life horrors can't, you know, get you ready for those things. And what he went through is something I've already seen, sadly, at that time. So he would try to do that. But my grandmother, whom I was close with, who I've seen her spirit many times prior to that, and I still see her around here and there, she would come into the room and she would chase him out and he'd disappear. And I think that's one of the other myths about spirits. They don't know each other are there. That's nonsense. They do know that they're each other. They're very well aware of each other. They're aware of the people who are alive. I'm going to guess it's kind of like how it is for us, for me. I'm going to guess for them, they can't tell the difference between who's dead and who's alive. Because, I mean, obviously I can tell by looking at them or by how they interact if they're alive or dead. Another thing that a lot of people have this kind of belief about is these instruments people use to kind of detect them. Yeah, they're all nonsense, every one of them. I can tell you that. Because those can be manipulated by many things. You can't go by that. And that's going to bring me into another subject I want to get into, which is one of the biggest things that people have issues with is, well, science proves can't produce proof. People can't produce proof of ghosts. science says it can't happen. Medical stuff says it can't happen, blah, blah, blah. Well, here's what I can tell you, because being someone who has a degree in sociology and psychology and human services, as well as knowing what I know in real life as well, and now you know that I also know that there are spirits, because I see them on a regular basis and I deal with it every day. But what I have a belief is this, and this is true. I think one of the issues that science has, same thing with skeptics, they don't really want to believe it because they can't explain it technically. They don't know if a ghost is alive or dead because not everyone can see or feel or whatever. I don't believe that everyone can, as I mentioned earlier. I don't believe it's something that everyone has. I think you have to be born with the ability to be able to see and talk to everyone. And I'm going to tell you this too. There probably are a lot more people like me out there who can actually communicate and talk to and see and whatever with the people who are no longer alive. But they don't want to say anything to anyone because of the fact that, well, they, you know, science says it's not real. Well, here's the issue with that. The thing about science is the fact that, kind of like medical, every year there's always a new study, and every year there's always a new experiment. Every year there's a new development and a breakthrough, right? Going back to the old dreaming thing I had back in the 80s when the doctor told me that you cannot control your dreams while dreaming. Years later, fast forward to current day, we all know now, due to scientific research now that they didn't have back then, that yes, you can alter your dreams in the dream state. They call it lucid dreaming, right? So that was wrong, but he said it was fact. The fact of the matter is, I think a lot of scientists, the ones who can't see those things, probably don't want to, for one thing, or actually cannot see them. And they're like me, seeing is believing. But you might say, well, you know, science proves it's not wrong. But science can't prove that, though, because science can't prove the existence or the non-existence of ghosts. But, I mean, the same thing goes for a lot of different diseases that people believe didn't exist, medicines that didn't exist then that are effective now. But it doesn't make it any less real, right? There are things that we believed in the past, doctors, psychiatrists, scientists believed in the past that have been proven years later to be either false or to be accurate scientifically. I think one of the biggest issues with as far as paranormal stuff goes, as far as ghosts, hauntings and whatnot, is the fact that no matter how many people bring evidence to these people, they're going to automatically try to discourage and to, because they can't have a rational decision, they will find everything to kind of put away that out of any idea as being a real thing. Either it scares them or because it would create so many issues in so many levels, they don't want to cause mass hysteria and whatever. I think the reasons why a lot of, you know, these scientists will say that there's been no proof is because even if there was proof in front of them, their minds, their egos, their kind of their wherewithal, they're kind of, their own kind of intelligence, I guess you'd say, would be clouded. And then it would say that they would be wrong. And that would be an issue. And I also think that because they want to protect either themselves or to protect, the public. Because I think if scientists or doctors were to say, yes, ghosts are real, I think they think everyone would freak out because they automatically think of every horror movie they've ever seen revolving a haunting or a ghost. I think that's honestly the reason why a lot of scientists, even if they've seen actual proof, will just quickly discredit it as either a hoax or not real. They'll try everything in their possibility to make sure it's not real. Another example of this would be let's say, I'm trying to think of an example here. There are many of examples of this scenario where, so, let's say you have a person who doesn't believe, you know, something, you know, doesn't believe, I don't know, take anything you want, really. But I'm going to take my uncle for an example. My uncle is a person who would find any excuse to debunk any kind of proof of any kind of, you know, something gone, something passed away, something not alive anymore, because he can't explain that, right? And because it would go against everything he's believed his entire life, and also because it's easier for him to deal with. Because let me tell you something. When you realize that there are ghosts, or that there are people who are alive, who are no longer alive, who are around you all the time, much like Cole Sears said in that movie, it's true. They are walking around like regular people. They do know they're dead. That's the thing, they got it wrong, most of them. But the thing about it is, and this brings me to the point where the Hollywood and the TV stuff comes into play, that actually puts a lot of more damage on the science, if you would, or on the ghosts in general, and the people in which who actually have the, I call it a nuisance that it is to be clairvoyant. Because again, it's not a gift. It's not something you want as much as you think it is. It's not. All right. Now, I'm going to my notes again. I actually made bullet points rather than notes, as I mentioned earlier. I already told you some kind of facts and myths. So here's the facts on the myths. As I said earlier, the tools that these supposed ghost hunters use are things you get like Radio Shack. And, you know, you can spend millions of dollars trying to, you know, figure out things. But here's the thing. The things that they're using are things that will automatically pick up the things that they believe to be entities, but they cannot see them. Again, not everyone is able to see them. Not everyone is able to experience these things. I think that's a good thing. I don't think everyone needs to, honestly, and I don't think the world's ready for it. Let me ask you guys something. Now, all these ghost shows and everything else, and I think, and I'm going to tell you, I have seen all of them because they drive me nuts. At first, it was kind of entertaining. Like, oh, this is cute. This ought to be interesting because I like horror movies. I like TV shows, and I know it's a work. You know, in these shows, those paranormal shows, even back then, I knew that there was some, you know, trickery or whatever. But let me tell you the annoyances of this. So these people supposedly looking for ghosts in these TV shows. Let me tell you why I know they're not ready to see what they're supposedly looking for. Because if they actually look at the reactions they get when they think they heard something, they want to hear something, they want the viewer to think that they're afraid. What do you think would happen if a ghost was to just walk out in front of these people and say, yeah, I'm a ghost, what of it? Or whatever the case may be. Look at how freaked out these supposed ghost hunters get when they think they hear a noise or they feel a breeze. Let me tell you, feeling a breeze is one thing. When you got a person sitting on your right and your left who you have never seen before in your life, you have to choose which one you listen to if you listen to either one. Imagine having two people you know are no longer alive telling you two different things, and then you have to sit there and do a show. Dude, please, if you have a hard time with a hearing a noise, if a ghost walked out in front of you and said, yeah, I'm a ghost, look at their reactions when they hear a noise, let alone seeing a ghost. And that's one of my biggest issues, because they make it to be something scary. And granted, I like horror movies, like I said. And I think it goes back to a lot of things like Robert Englund and Wes Craven have told me. And this is also a scientific, and this is also something that is known to be a fact. People who have a traumatic childhood or someone who has seen real life horrors, they have an escape in horror movies, because no matter how, you know, scary those situations can be, real life for them has been nothing compared to their horror movie is going to be over in an hour and a half, which is rated R. Where real life, if you were to take real life situations, it would be rated NC-17 XXX. Think about your everyday life and think about what your life would be like if you did know everyone, if you did experience the same things people like me do. And everyone thinks, oh, it's a great thing to do that. No, it isn't. You try taking a shower with 15 people in your bathroom. How many people like to, how many people are on a sports team? I grew up in a sports team. I played multiple sports, many locker rooms. And let me tell you, as I said before, every person I encounter in life, real people, real life people, have at least 5 to 6 other people around them who are not. They cannot see them, but I can. What do you think that's like? Can you imagine that? And everyone wants to think that this is a great idea, this is a great thing. And the other thing is, this is also funny to me. In these horror movies and TV shows, they always go on at night, right? Oh, let's go at night. Why? I got news for you. This morning, I had six ghosts talk to me this morning before 9 a.m. The sun's out and everything else. I could walk down the street. Yesterday, I walked to Stop and Shop not too far away. I encountered 7, 8, 9, probably about 20 in between the time it took me to walk from where I am to the Stop and Shop next door. 20 different people I knew, or I didn't know, who I knew that were no longer alive. And they're all, you know, talking whatever. Here's the thing. I sadly am trying to learn other languages. I only really am fluent in English and Pig Latin, which isn't really a language. And I do know little phrases here and there, little other things, but see, a lot of people have this belief that people, you know, the ghost is going to talk to you in English or whatever, you know, language it's going to be. And no, that's not how it works. It's kind of like you go anywhere else. There are many cultures in life. There are many people and things, and everything dies. And the other myth is that only people are alive. And that's also not true. I mean, how many of these, you know, ghost stories or these ghost shows look for, you know, dead cats, dead birds, dead parrots? Because I got news for you. Everything dies. I mean, I've seen many cats and dogs, and I've seen people young and old, and that kind of breaks my heart as a father. And to be honest with you, usually, you know, I think in order to keep a level head with it and be able to kind of go through your day and able to function with your everyday tasks on top of having, you know, a spirit come to you and say, hey, you know, talk to you, whatever. I always, you know, because of my kids, I always have time for the young people, but it breaks my heart when there's, spirit that no longer people are young people, or their parents who are sad about their kids and whatever. As a dad, that breaks my heart because there's nothing worse than losing a child. And I've lost many people in my lifetime. And the sad reality is I don't see every single one of them, kind of like you don't see everyone after you graduate high school. It's kind of the same thing. I hate to tell you that. A lot of people believe that, you know, people will travel to you, whatever. And my experience is if they're attached with you, if they're one of the 5, 6 people, yeah, you're probably right. They probably are going to go with you. Because I've seen there's at least 5, 6 people with every single person, depending on who it is. Younger people usually have a little bit more than the 5. Usually it's more 6 for the younger people, 5 to the older people. But, you know, it's a very surreal thing, really. And I think it's something that doesn't get – I think it's something that gets sensationalized more than it should. I've seen all these shows, and I knew way back before I even had to know that they were fake, like John Edwards and – you know, the psychic mediums and these supposed tarot card readers. And let me tell you this also. A lot of people will talk to you about the Ouija board. The Ouija board is an evil thing. Let me tell you, the Ouija board, it's a piece of plastic and cardboard. That's reality. What isn't reality, what is reality, is that people are naive enough to want to fear to have that feeling of fear when they play it. That's what they're getting off with that in. That's what they're looking to get out of that game. And it is just a game. It's kind of like chess, checkers, mousetrap, sorry, battleship, Cards Against Humanity, one of our family favorites. So what drives me a little annoyed is all these people that put so much faith in these types of things, as in these are the things that are pure evil, and these are the things that are going to bring forth the ghosts. That's nonsense. If ghosts want to talk to you, they will. They'll find a way, or like I said, I don't think everyone is equipped to talk to them. I think they talk to who they know can handle it. I've been dealing with it because I've been born with it. My kids deal with it. My wife deals with it. We all deal with it. Again, depends on who the person is, to what level. My wife can feel them. I can feel, see, touch, talk, and everything else. And it's not always fun. It's heartbreaking, like I said, sometimes. But the reason I did this episode, as I said, was because my wife thought it would be a good idea for me to share these things with you guys. Because there's so many people out there who I think put such a negative spin on it and talk so much nonsense that makes people who actually have the ability to feel, to see, to talk with the ghosts, who want to, it makes us look like idiots. But we're not making money off it. Because here's the thing. I think people who are actually clairvoyant, people who actually can feel and talk with them, are people who will not take money because they don't see it as a gift. Why do people get money for going to work? Because you do a job, right? Most of the time it's things you learn. Even if it's milking a cow, if you're on a farm, or if you're a police officer, you go to police academy. If you're a soldier, you go to war, you go to, you know, army training. If you're a nurse, you go to med school or a doctor. If you want to be a teacher, you go to, you know, college on top of college. If you don't want to go to school at all, you can just kind of learn as you go, right? It's all about learning. But when it comes to, you know, someone who can communicate with the dead, how do you make money on that? How do you feel good about taking money from someone when you know you 100% can't guarantee you're going to talk to the person they want you to talk to? That's not how that works. I'll give you an example. I live in a place that has many, many people and many different people. Let's say an apartment complex or a hotel. I've been in a hotel. Oh, hotels happen all the time. I don't need to be told that a place is haunted. And this is one of those other things. There's all these places that claim to be haunted and they make money on the fact that, oh, this place is haunted, that place is haunted. I can tell you the real haunting places and what the places that are not haunted. I can tell you if there's ghosts someplace or there's not, because it's kind of obvious to me because they're there. I'm in a place right now in my room recording this with you. You'll notice there's no EVPs, electrical voice phenomenon, which, by the way, is also not real. These things that people pick up on there, these are the things these ghost hunters supposedly use as supposed evidence. This is why science laughs at people who say that they can do the ghost stuff, because they can easily know, well, you know, that's static and that's a, you know, a truck going by. That's this, that, and the other thing. And you want to hear that, so you make up any words. Can I just tell you, if EVPs were real, the people who are no longer alive talk just like they did when they died. If I can understand them, can you hear, I speak English right now. Everyone can hear me well. This is how clear you can hear dead people talking. This right here. Granted, different, you know, dialects and whatnot. I'm an individual who's heard a lot of different dialects from many different places. But if they speak English, I can probably, you know, get by with talking with them. If they don't speak English, I don't speak a lot of other languages. Sometimes I'll have to Google it, or sometimes I just, you know, I can't have long conversation in the middle of public to pull up, you know, hey, translate this. But there's no such thing as an EVP. Because if you'll notice, whenever they get these recordings and there's recorders, they're very broken up or staticky, you know, really listen for it. You don't need to do that if it's a real ghost talking to you. It's it's me talking to you right now over these airwaves. That's what you can hear right now. That's how clear these ghosts are. So anyone who tells you EVPs is proof are out of their minds. And that is one of those things. So I, science can say, hey, look at this. This is, you know, not real. This proves it. It doesn't prove that ghosts aren't real. It proves that people want that to be true. But again, that goes back to the fact that the scientists, the doctors, and the skeptics are all in the same boat, where sometimes it's hard to accept things that we can't explain. But give it time and you probably will. If you find a scientist or a doctor who actually experiences this, then you probably will find a doctor who will say, oh, here's proof. But the issue will be that no matter what proof that doctor produces, the other doctors and psychiatrists will pick it apart until it's no longer a thing, which is why there's no, quote, proof of ghosts, because the scientists doesn't want that to be there, because, again, and I'm not someone who believes in, you know, what do they call those? What do they call those stupid things? The belief to some, you know, a conspiracy theory. I'm not a conspiracy theory guy at all. I'm very black and white is how it is. It is what it is. You know, I don't believe in, you know, conspiracies or ideas that aren't backed up by fact. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't. I think people who believe in conspiracies are usually people who do a more discredit than they do anything to for the pro. So what happens is, you know, but it does make sense to me, knowing my training in human services, that if a doctor was to have a person who's commenting about, you know, a dead relative, it's the doctor's first instinct to, you know, associate that with guilt of loss. And then to, you know, give them medication and hope that that goes away. But in fact, there's no shutting it off. Either you are clairvoyant or you're not. Medication won't stop that coming in because it's a physical thing and not a mental thing. It's like walking down the street and going onto a bus, going into a store. Think about everywhere you go. And think about what would happen if a scientist or a doctor would say, you know what, proof, yes, ghosts are real. Because then everyone gets all sketchy. Everyone gets really antsy. And then everyone gets even more, you know, it invokes more fear that needs to be there. Because, you know, things like Hollywood film, television, whatever, has taught society that ghosts, spirits are scary things, that they're evil things. I have not encountered anything that was really, really too much for me to handle. I've had some pretty nasty customers. I've had some assholes. But like I deal with the people in my world, in the real life, I deal with the, like I deal with the people who are physical. I deal with them. Someone had said, you know, if you're in a haunted house, what do? You know, aren't you afraid of the ghost coming to get you? I said, well, if you go into a haunted house, knowing it's a haunted house, then you should be ready for that to happen. But what a lot of people don't expect is something I know, is that if I'm going into a haunted house, I'm walking in there with 5 or 6 dead people with me anyway. So it doesn't matter whether it's haunted or not. It's already haunted because I'm walking there with 5 or 6 other people with me who are no longer alive. But here's the other thing. If there's anything really nasty in there, do you really think the people who are with me are going to let something happen with me with the people who aren't? As far as, you know, the spirits being able to touch and not, some of them can and some of them can't. I think it's ignorant to think that not all of them can touch things and manipulate objects and so forth. I've been high-fived many times. I've had my hands shaken. I've had a pat on the back a few times. I said something one time. My grandmother got upset and smacked me. I had it coming. So there you have it. My mother at times will slap me on the back of the head like she used to sometimes if I say something out of line. But that's just a thing, right? So to say that they don't touch anybody is wrong. To say that they can't talk is wrong. To assume that they only speak that they only speak English is wrong. To assume you can turn it off and on like so many people say they can, that's not true. I heard a woman today say that ghosts, in order to walk into you, have to come in from the back. I've never had a person walk into me, but I can tell you that it's probably because there's six people standing around me who wouldn't let them just walk into me if I don't know who they are. And here's another thing about this whole thing that kind of will, I don't know if raise some questions or put things to bed, I guess, so to speak, but something I don't talk about often is the fact that I am a three-time cancer survivor. I may or may not mention that in the past I had cancer. What you may not know is that when I was 18 years old, prior to I was 18, my mother had went to a supposed psychic friend of hers. This woman was not a psychic, by the way. She was no way, shape, or form a psychic. She was a woman who believed in tarot cards. I don't believe someone who reads tarot cards to be a psychic. There's just someone who believes in that. Just like I don't believe in the zodiac sign, or I don't believe in a lot of those things. Do I believe in karma? Yes. Do I believe in things happen for a reason? Yes, because life has shown me that. So there you go. But this woman told my mother when I was like 8 that I was there for this reading. She's doing it with the psychic room. And during this tea reading, she told my mother I was going to be dead before I was 18. When I was 8 years old, I was there in front of her. And my mother got all upset because she believed this woman. And then, you know, years later, I knew this woman was a fraud. But odd thing would happen is that when I was 18, that was the first time I was diagnosed with cancer the first time. To be honest, I didn't go to the doctors like I normally, I didn't go to the doctors a lot, and I still don't go to the doctors a great deal. But one of the things I do have is I know when I'm sick, I know when there's something wrong, and I know when to ask for help when I need it. So this is one of the reasons why, because when I was 18 years old, I had a lot of warning signs that there was something physically wrong with me. A lot of physical ailments I had at the time that, you know, kind of were concerning, but I put them off because one, I didn't want to scare anyone or make anyone upset. And two, I had to work and save money for my apartment and everything else. And I just moved into my apartment, so I had to pay for my apartment and everything else. And I just began wrestling school when I was 18, and I had to graduate high school still. So I had no time to sit there and do cancer treatments or feel sorry or get hurt, whatever. So I didn't go to the doctors like I should. And knowing that I had all these ailments and the pain got so bad, I got so much more sick. I was doing, you know, going from high school sports to wrestling school at night, and my body would kill me. And physically, I knew there was something wrong with me. Unfortunately, when I finally went to the doctors, they said that I had colon cancer the first time. They had to do surgery right away. And that's how bad I let it get before whatever. So they did surgery, and knock on wood, you know, they were able to remove the cancer from my colon, well, along with part of my colon as well, and save my life. But that I don't talk about is the fact that for about a minute and a half, 4 minutes, I was legally dead on the operating table. I know this because I was dead. And this is where the other part of the thing where I think a lot of people, a lot of scientists and doctors are do not want to expose the existence of ghosts, because if in fact someone's to say, well, there's a heaven or there's no hell, then people who are religious would feel really bad and be really angry, and it causes even more problems, because religion is one of the biggest things that people fight over, which is why politics, religion, taxes, government stuff, and those types of things are things you just don't talk about on a regular basis, because it's never going to end up well. Never. So don't even bother bringing those things up in conversation anywhere. But I think the fact of the matter is once I died, physically, I knew I was gone. I didn't know I was gone. But what I do know is I came back, as you can hear me now. And the doctors said that I had been dead for 4 minutes, and they were able to relieve me. I don't know what they were able to do. But basically, my heart stopped in surgery, and I had basically died for a little while, and they had to do very many things to kind of fix me, bring me back. 4 minutes had passed, and they finally brought me back after 4 minutes. And a lot of people wonder what the significance of four is, and why F4L and why four is always a lucky number for me. Well, 4 minutes is how long I was dead for and came back to life. Most people who have ever been in a coma or whatever, or anybody who's ever passed out, they know how kind of scary that is. Someone who's been knocked out maybe in sports, you know how scary it is to be out for a few minutes. For you, it seems like seconds, but for everyone around you, it's longer, right? And that's kind of how it was. I woke up, and while I was out, there was nothing. I was in surgery. I don't believe in painkillers. I don't believe in all that stuff. So I took the surgery, which is not smart, looking back then. But I was dead for 4 minutes, and they brought me back. And I didn't see a lot. It was just dark. And then I came back, I woke up, and here I can talk to you guys right now. Clearly, I'm alive. But, you know, that begs the question. You know, a lot of people wonder what happens when we die, and that's kind of what the overall question about life after death is. What is after it? And for me, I have no idea. I don't know what is after life. But I do know there are many people in here right now that can tell you that there's plenty of people who have died, who die, and they know they died. They can tell you how they died, why they died. Some of them better than others, some of them worse than others. The hardest ones are the youngest ones. Tragic, sad, your heart goes out to them. There's a poor lady who passed away and lost her infant. I don't see infants a lot, but I can hear them crying and stuff, but I don't hear them or see them a lot. But because, you know, I don't know if it's a thing or not, but they have to be able to walk, kind of be around. I've seen dogs, cats, animals. I've seen people old, young, all races. I've not seen an infant, but I've heard them plenty. I can feel them. And, you know, I mean, I can see toddlers and stuff like that. I've seen that, which is, again, heartbreaking. Sad. There are areas, for those people who are wondering, a lot of people want to know, like, where are these supposed haunted places, right? And I think the problem is when you're going to these places, you're automatically looking for an entertaining value in someone else's misery, in someone else's history. I think it's important to know our history. I think it's important to know where we came from. I think it's important to kind of know, as a society or just people in general, human race, you know, things. So there are times when I wish that, you know, the people who are no longer alive could talk to the people who are alive now to kind of say, hey, listen, smarten up. What is this? I had a woman, I heard a woman today talk about, you know, telling the ghosts about social distance. You're right. They don't know what that is because that doesn't exist. Boundaries. There are no boundaries when you're a beacon for people who are no longer alive. The other thing is you really have to know. I said earlier, I just glanced over it. A lot of people have this belief it has to be at night. It has to be at 3 o'clock in the morning. It has to be at midnight. All of that is nonsense. The fact of the matter is, as I said, I think I said many times now, there are ghosts around you every single waking hour. It's just a matter of how sensitive are you? How willing are you? Are you skeptic? Are you wanting to hear it? Do they want you to know they're there? Or they just want to sit and watch? Sometimes they do want to be heard, and that's when they'll make sure you know. Sometimes not so much. Sometimes they'll come talk to me like me. I don't do readings and things like that. I don't profit over this. And whenever I've had black and white dreams, I usually keep them all to myself, and I still will, and whatnot. I can tell you that anywhere I've gone, I've seen ghosts. I've seen the dead people. There's no such thing as a haunted place when you're a beacon for hauntings and people who are no longer alive. That's reality, people. The reality is, how many people like to go to the bathroom in the morning or at night or whatever? Now, does it make you feel better? The people who want to believe in the ghosts, right? How many of us feel better knowing that there are six people who are standing around you when you're in the bathroom, using the bathroom, while you're using the bathroom, six people just standing around you? Would that make you feel better? Or is it better not to know that there's six people standing around you who might not want them to see you in that predicament? And think about other intimate things that you're doing, older people or couples or whatever. Think about that. Now, here's something else. I guess this is where it kind of can be kind of not so much. Well, here's the thing. My kids know about this, as my wife does and my family does. This is something we all have to go through. When I say my kids know that there's nothing I won't find out about, there's many reasons why that is. For the most part, I am very observant in general. But on top of being observant, they know if I really had to, I could just, you know, ask certain people or entities or whatnot if, you know, that was the case. My mother and my grandmother constantly are checking on my kids on a regular basis when they're not with me because they're checking on them. That's just what the mothers do. Sometimes you can't take that out of them. It makes me sad that my kids aren't able to hold my mother or to get to know her personality in the physical form. But I know that my mom watches out for my kids a lot. And there have been times when my mother has actually saved my kids or has, you know, clued me into things that are going on that I should know about so I can help my kids in certain scenarios when they don't even know how I know things. But now that they're older, they know. When you talk about reading someone, right? The people who call it reading is when they do this fictitious thing where they go in a room and they say, oh, you know, I'm sensing this and that. That's not how I read people. I know when someone's lying to me. I know when someone's being truthful. I also can see what they have done. And because I can actually look into their eyes and I can actually see what they have done by their eyes. I know what they've done because I've seen what they've done. If I look you dead in the eye, which is why, by the way, if my kids don't want me to know something, they won't look me in the eyes. and they know to avoid my eye contact. Because if I catch your eyes, I know the truth of whatever it is you're saying. Some people could say, well, that's just because you're very observant. You come from a family of liars. That may be true, but also it helps when you also have people who are no longer alive who hang around your sibling, your family around, who can tell you these things. Now, I had mentioned earlier that I don't believe entities can kind of fly across, you know, barriers and stuff. I don't believe it's that like that at all. I think it goes by geographic areas or personal contact. I think when it comes to like our family, for example, I know that my mother, my grandmother will constantly be around, are constantly around my kids. My late friend Adam, who we lost a number of years ago, he is around me a lot, but especially now, but he's also around my son and my daughter on times. And Pam, who we lost a number of years ago, is around them as well. So, and sometimes when I'm not there with them, my friend Pam will, you know, watch over my wife. And sometimes D-Rock. Dr. D-Rock's pretty good. But, different people, my mother will sometimes sit with my wife and stuff like that and make sure my wife's okay. Another personal story. My wife sadly suffers from sleep apnea, which a lot of people do. Sleep apnea, for those people who don't know, is a sleeping disorder in which a person can stop breathing. Usually it's in persons who snore a lot. And what happens is they stop breathing in the middle of the night, sometimes multiple times. Now, my wife, since we started dating way back when, two kids later, and throughout the year, she's always snored. But something that I'm grateful for, something that I have the edge in, is the fact that when I'm with my wife, I know when to wake up to make sure she's breathing. Because the scariest thing is when your wife doesn't breathe. And the reality of it is someone who with sleep apnea who doesn't have, you know, equipment or whatever. And by the way, my wife now has the mask because she finally listened to me. But the reason being is because thanks to my mother, my grandmother, and several other people having to wake me while I'm sleeping to wake her when she can't breathe. A lot of that is due to the fact that I have that ability to have them wake me up when she's not breathing, when she wasn't getting treated for the machine. Now she has a machine. I don't have to worry about it as often. So that makes me kind of feel better. I can sleep. Because there were nights I couldn't sleep at all because I was worried my wife would stop breathing. I mean, that the thought of being a single parent raising two kids and all that stuff and losing another loved one, it was not feeling good to me. But thanks to my mother, who has been gone 10 years before I got married to my wife, good 10 years, and my grandmother, who died when I was 13, thanks to them, my wife was able to get tested for it and is getting the machine, thankfully, able to sleep without, you know, having to worry about that. Because with the machine now, she doesn't have that issue. It helps her breathe in the middle of the night. There's no snoring as you can hear because of that. Otherwise, it would sound like a lot worse. I never talk about that a lot, but a lot of people assume that this haunting thing and being clairvoyant is a negative thing, and it is not always fun. But I am grateful that the people who are around me, who I know are no longer alive, are actually helping in some ways. My grandmother, my mother, and those sorts of people were always very protective of me. My aunt, who is very creative, will sometimes, you know, pop up once in a while. Again, I don't think it's necessarily, it's not like, you know, you have control over it. It's like, I want so-and-so to be here right now. It doesn't work that way, being actually clairvoyant. It kind of just happens because my mother could come in, one can be here, and, you know, my uncle can be in the other or vice versa or whatever the case may be. Because the reality of it is I'm in a room right now. My wife's sleeping, And I'm looking around the room. I have like 12 people right now. Yeah, 12 people in the room. By the way, there's only me and my wife physically here in the room, but there's 12 beings in this room, if you would. Two living and the rest, well, there you go. Many different things. They kind of were surprised that it took me this long, but also, you know, they're not so sure this will work either, me sitting here telling you about all this, because a lot of people have this knowledge that ghosts aren't smart, or the entities aren't smart, or they stop thinking, and that's not true either. They are still the people they once were. It's just no longer alive, I guess. And also, contrary to belief, it's whatever age they pass on in is how old they are. And that's what's the tragic thing about it is. I got two little kids in here, which is very sad, let me tell you. But they're my little buddies. And, you know, sometimes when I'm here and stuff like that, and one of them will be up, or a couple of them will be upset. And one of the things I always am is someone who people, they feel the need to talk to, which is not always good when you're clairvoyant, because, of course, a lot of people, like in the movie The Sixth Sense, the people, they do want to communicate. I think they really badly want to communicate with a lot of people. But again, I don't think it's something that everyone is equipped for. I can't explain why that is. But seeing how science won't even look into that, because they can't get past that first threshold with admitting that there's a thing there, because they don't want to cause hysteria, because that's what that would do. It's kind of the same thing. I'm not saying there are UFOs or not, because those can be easily a secret ship or whatever. But, you know, the people who are in charge, so to speak, or just people in general, the experts, if you would, they're going to tell the public whatever they can to make them feel better and to ease their concerns as best they can. I think scientists and doctors know that they tell people ghosts are here and ghosts are real, that they automatically think that, you know, all these dead people, it's like The Walking Dead, which is not a real thing. Or like, you know, it's the same thing as if they would say, yes, aliens are real. Here's one right here. This is Mark. You know what I mean? It would just cause people to say, oh my God, there really are aliens. And then all the people out there who sensationalize, who think it's automatically a negative thing, because that's what society teaches us, that's kind of what would happen. I think that's why scientists and doctors and whatever will not find proof, and why they will always be skeptical, because if they're honest, they will always try to be debunked and to kind of hide it from everyone else, because of the fact it would just cause more harm than good. Because I do believe that some things you shouldn't know. This is one of them. I think that if everyone had this ability, I don't necessarily think it would. I think it would work a lot worse than it is. And I think that everyone, as much as they want to have that, the fact that you can't just turn it off and turn it on like everyone wants, it can be annoying and can be scary and freaking out or whatever. Again, I want you to take that scenario. You're using the bathroom in the morning, or you're taking a shower. Think of whatever you do yourself, whatever it is, your activities, to know that there are six people right now, or five to six people with you right now, whatever you're doing, or whatever it was. Does that make you feel better, or does it make you feel a little paranoid, a little worried? Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. If nothing's happened to you, you probably shouldn't have to worry. But the reality is, I can tell you that that's a thing. If nothing's hurt you, nothing's hit you, nothing's yelled at you, nothing's done anything bad to you, you probably have nothing to worry about. But again, it's just that feeling of knowing that they're there. Me, as I said, there's 14 now in here since I started this. When I originally started this, it was 24. I'm in a room, not a lot of people in here. Because my wife and I are the only ones with pulses. And I talk like this. Why do I talk like this? Because this is reality of it. This is what I've come to know as reality. This is what this reality is. For those people who sensationalize it and make it more than it is or less than it is, it's kind of what it is. If you want to know what it's really like to be someone who can see and talk to the dead people, ask the if you could imagine what Cole Sear did, and you only seen three or four of the ghosts that he had. By the way, that's how you see them when they die, how they died. That's reassuring, isn't it? So I don't want you guys all to think that, you know, it's all sunshine and rainbows. It's not. I don't want you to think that you should be afraid either. You shouldn't be. I think if it hasn't hurt you or nothing's bothered you yet, I've got a high five from little kid. Thanks. Anyway, yeah, you know, it's kind of fun trying to do this right at this episode here. And normally none of these people will talk to me when I'm doing these. And that goes to go to that whole EVP thing, why it's not real. How many of these podcasts have I done already? I want you to go back and listen to any of them. I bet you won't hear a single supposed EVP unless it's another clear voice as clear as this one. It's not a real thing. But if you hear a voice like this, please tell me, because I've actually never listened back to any of my shows. I'm proud of my shows. It's not that I'm not. I actually just talking to my wife about this today. Any of the videos I've ever done, any of the shots I've done, any of the movies I've made, any of the wrestling matches I've had, any of the work, if you would have done, I've actually never watched back after I've done it. I know that sounds really horrible, and I'm really sorry if that makes people sad, but I just have a lot of work to do, and I keep having to do new stuff and more things, so I don't really... Sadly, it's not that I'm trying to be rude or anything, but after I make the initial movie or video, whatever I'm making, it's out there and it's done, right? I got to move on to the next project because I have way too much stuff to do. But I'm proud of the work I've done. I'm not saying I'm not. But if you go back on this podcast, by all means, go back to any of my early episodes, because I've done this show for a little while now. I've had guests on the show. I've had a few different microphones. And tell me yourself. Email me. Say, hey, you know, I was listening to your show, and you asked us to let us know if we heard any other voices other than either your special guest, which it is clear that I have a special guest, or yourself. Let me know if you hear any other voices talking to you while I'm talking. Because let me tell you, it's not like they don't talk to me while I'm talking to you. Because they do. They'll chime in little things here and there. Like I said, the kid over here gave me a high five. He thinks it's funny that I'm doing this. I'm a dad. That's what I do at first. You got to make everyone happy. When it comes to the kids, you know, living or dead, I try to make them feel a little bit more at ease, I guess. Even though it's, you know, the hardest thing to do and this thing to do sometimes. And whatnot, but that's kind of the reality of it. And that's kind of my life for 41 years. I've been dealing with a lot of this, and yeah, I think what you do as you get older is you can certainly learn ways to either learn more languages. You can talk to more of them, or, you know, figure out some way of distracting yourself from them. Which I don't know how that's even possible. There's really no way to do that. Anyone who's ever had kids knows what this is like. You know, how many parents out there have ever needed 5 minutes themselves? We often say, oh, I want to, you know, 5 minutes, just give me a few minutes to myself. And let me tell you, when you're dealing with this, you don't have that 5 minutes or anything else. And they're a lot older than your kids. So that's kind of what I want you guys to realize. That's why I say it's not all sunshine and rainbows. It's not something everyone wants as much as you want to think you do. It's one of those things that everyone feels that they need, they have to say, but they don't actually mean. Because I hope they don't. Because I really don't think everyone would want this. I really don't see it as a gift. You know, I have, you know, it's definitely given me some help in some ways. And I have learned to kind of, I don't want to say use it, but it hasn't, I mean, the fact that I'm able to actually communicate with my mother and my grandmother, who I know go between myself and my kids, because that's kind of generally how it goes. They attach to a certain person or a thing, and they'll kind of go back and forth between the two once they're in the same area. I've seen that happen. But one thing I can honestly say, you know, if you have a relative who lives, you know, in East Germany somewhere, they're not going to come over just because they got to come over if they've never met you before. That's something probably is going to be a little, there would have to be some type of tie. Like my grandmother, my great grandmother, for example, that was her house before, it was my grandmother's house. She was attached to that house and my grandmother. I remember that whole 5-6 thing. Yeah, she was one of the people who were around my grandmother. That's kind of how it works. So there's that. So this has been a little longer than I thought it was going to be. And to be honest with you, this one's a little lighter than what tomorrow's is going to be. Tomorrow's is going to be a very different subject. It's going to be me talking in detail about why I do not like the month of October. And it has nothing to do with this. But some of it may be attached, as you'll hear. But again, as my wife and I was sitting there talking over the summer and hearing about all these people who, you know, talk about what it's like or not like, and people who don't agree or do believe. And I just had to be, I guess my wife felt that I should be the one to be the voice and to tell you guys that the reality of it is they are real. There really are people who are no longer alive, who are around us at all times. That's reality. I don't believe everyone is able to accept it or to indulge in it. I don't believe that's a thing. I think there's certain things, maybe has to be again, our thing is genetics. It does follow in our family. As I said, my wife, even though she's not married to me, I mean, she's married to me, but she's not blood relative of mine. She had it from her own self, and then that got passed on to my kids. So you see how that works? That's kind of how that explains it. So whenever someone asks me if I walk into a haunted house, if I'm afraid of the haunted house or whatever, my honest answer is, listen, if there's ghosts in the house, one of the first things they got to know is I'm not coming alone. That if I'm going into a house that may have the worst ghost ever, I'm going to that house with 6 of my closest dead relatives or closest family members who will have no issues with holding people accountable, if you know what I mean. So I'm not overly worried about it. Those types of things don't scare me because of the fact I know I'm protected and because I can tell them myself. And because the people around me will not let that happen. And yep, I always know when some place is haunted. Yes, everywhere I've been, I've seen something. These are questions I know are going to get asked. And if you have a question, a real question, feel free to ask by emailing me at wilddreammatches@gmail.com. Again, I do not read other people. I do not do this thing where, oh, I hear a voice or anything like that. It doesn't work that way because that's not how it works in general. It just, you know, there's a lot of things that one of the reasons I wanted to do this show for you guys is to let you know that not everything you hear is real. Not everything you hear is actual, but there are some truths to the facts, if you would. Are ghosts real? Yes, because I've seen them, deal with them on a regular basis. If they could, all right, 15, hi, Larry. If 15 of them now want to come up here and tell you, give you your own counts, then they will, but they don't have to. Whenever you hear someone say, well, I wish I could see a ghost, I want you to think and ask them, well, listen to this podcast and tell me you want to see a ghost. Because once you have what I have, once you are able to open up to that, or if you're open to that in general, there's no curtain. There's no shutting it off. I don't know anyone who has the ability to completely do that. You can either choose to ignore them or not. I was always respectful for the most part, and for the most part, I'm curious. But I've learned over the times when to listen to them. They know when I'm going to. I speak when I have to. I comfort them when I can, because it's not easy for them either. A lot of people often think about how it affects the living people. I want you to think of how heartbreaking it is for the people who are no longer alive to see either the pain or the upsetness of other people, knowing there's nothing they can physically do about it. As a parent, I can tell you to know that your kids are in trouble and not be able there to help them is a very, very humbling experience. It's not something I ever want. I automatically am a protector. I like to protect my family and my friends. And the fact that I can understand and I appreciate the fact that these people who are no longer alive have those feelings for their family members for the same reason. The problem is they can't physically do anything. And that's hard for them. And to see little kids who are 5, 6, 12 years old, who are no longer alive for whatever reason, to know that their other siblings have gotten older and moved on or whatever, and they're staying the same. They'll never be able to get married, have a family of their own, because these are things we've talked about. They're older, and they still have the same minds as they did when they were 5, 6, 7 years old. So anyone who's ever had a parent, had a kid kind of knows how to talk to people that age, but you have to talk to the non-living people the same way, because that's the same state they're in. And the same thing goes with older people. It's heartbreaking. It's sad, but it's reality. It's my reality, and I've been dealing with it for 41 years. And which is why whenever I see these ghost shows or these people who claim to be clairvoyants making money off it or joking around about it, I kind of laugh at them, because it's not something you should boast about. Because one, you yourself, depending on who you are and why you're doing it, it's kind of, kind of makes you look kind of like it's about you. And yeah, it is. But I'm doing this more in the fact that a lot of people are, this day and age, a lot of people are either concerned or worried or whatever. If the simple question is, are ghosts real? Then the answer is yes. If that's the simple answer, I know it took me, almost 2 hours to tell you, if that's the one answer you wanted to hear, are ghosts real? Then yes. Fact is, ghosts are real. The myth is about all of the perception that is around it. Both the people who are believers who think that they want to know, but truthfully they don't. And the skepticism of the people who are naysayers and the people who don't believe it for whatever reason, whether it be protection or ego or whatever. That's just human nature. But it's also about the people who are no longer alive and the respect that I have for these people. Regardless if they're living or dead, they're still people. They were people who had a life who no longer do, which is why I take the time sometimes and I, you know, will give them 5 minutes to tell me whatever they want to say. Do I go around and start calling up family members or whatever? No, because it's not how it works and that's not what they want. It's just they want to get something off their chest. They get off their chest. That's how it works. So I hope this kind of brings some more clarity on what it is to be clairvoyant. Again, I know I had said it earlier, but if you have any questions that are, you know, not asking me, you know, what does my dead relative Uncle Larry have to say about X amount, I'm not going to answer that question because that's not, again, how that works. I can't say, hey, Larry, who I've never met, please come and talk to me about your relative who I've never met or I barely know. That's not how it works, which is why I don't often talk about this. Because, again, I don't see it as a gift or a good thing. It's something that is part of me, but I've accepted that, and I'm okay with it. But it's not something I celebrate, not something I boast about, not something I advertise, because it's not something that should be celebrated or something that should be boasted around about. It's kind of like someone who, I don't know, has bad eyesight. I'm nearsighted. I would wear my glasses in public before I would tell people about the other stuff. I barely go out of the house without glasses, let alone tell people that I can see dead people, as they say. And as far as, you know, Hollywood TV movies perception of it, I mean, I very rarely see anything that was like, oh, absolutely 100%. That's what it is. I think The Sixth Sense kind of nails it. I think one of the reasons I am so, and I really enjoyed that movie is because of how realistic that is for someone who goes through that, because that is how it is. you know, trying to sleep at night. Now, I'm insomniac, most people know. But as I said, life is actually good for, is a cure for insomnia. Because since being married and having the kids and stuff like that, I have been able to sleep at night at some points. I still don't sleep like everybody else, and I require very little sleep in order for me to function. But I do eventually sleep better than I used to. But in general, in layman's terms, it's just, you know, when someone's trying to sleep and having someone talk in your ear, or if your parents who ever try to put your kids to bed at night, think of it like that. You try to put your son or daughter to bed and they keep getting out of bed to talk to you, or, hey, Dad, I need a drink of water. I need to go to the bathroom. We all been through the song and dancing with who's ever been a parent. well, it's kind of the same thing. You know, someone wants to say something. Someone wants to talk to you. Someone wants to play with you. One of the kids always constantly wants to play a game. And, you know, I'll have him play with the other kid until I get up in the morning or whatever, just give myself a break. That's reality, what I have to deal with. And they're not even alive anymore. they're not even my kids. but I accept it because it's what I do. It's who I am. And, you know, the same thing goes for the older people. They're the same thing. It's kind of the same mentality, really. So, you know, those people who think, oh, yeah, that's what I want, it's not. People who are really clairvoyant won't boast about it, won't make money off of it, because I'm not going to make money off of this. I don't want to make money off of this. So please don't ask me to, you know, read or ask me about certain things, because any time I've done that in the past has never worked out well for the person because they get freaked out. I get that, and I understand that. And, again, it goes back to the old thing, be careful what you wish for, because I'll answer you. It's the same thing. If you want me to tell you, I'll tell you. Just make sure you want the answer. Tomorrow, a lot of people have asked me about why I don't like October. Tomorrow, I'm going to answer you. And it's going to be a very, very poignant story, let's put it that way, and graphic, but 100% honest, and it won't be easy to sit through, I'm sure to listen to, but it is reality, and it'll answer your questions, as far as that goes, and maybe give you a little bit more insight. I'm sure tonight gave you a lot of different perspective of me. And, you know, those people wonder who, when, you know, as far as, you know, dead wrestlers or dead celebrities and things of that nature. Yeah, all the time happens a lot, especially if I work with the people or I work near the people. That's just how that works. not often, because they have their own people there around. I think it goes back to that whole five or six person thing. I think persons have those people, unless they have no one, which some of these people around me do have nobody. That's why they're around me most of the time. Again, I'm used to it. It doesn't bother me, but it is what it is. So, but anyway, again, another challenge. If you guys can actually hear these people, here's my friends who are, yeah, they've been chiming in here and there. Little kid over here said his name. So if you heard his name, let me know what you think his name is. You know, in the meantime, don't try to listen to it because it's not how it is. Because this kid's English. He speaks English. He's very much American. He speaks English, trust me. And a little British kid over here, he speaks English as well, but it's British English, if it would. Again, the only ones I really communicate with a great deal are people who speak a lot of English, different for dialects or whatever, but I can understand a lot of it. I can't really speak to people who I don't speak their language. And I think most of them know that, was why they, you know, might chop in and say something. That's why I know certain phrases like no Espanol. Sometimes my, you know, six people will tell the people before they even ask me that, yeah, he doesn't speak English, get moving. And if they're really negative people or things or entities, then the rest of the six people around me won't let them near me. That's just how that works. I've seen that happen too. You want to talk about a person fight. I'm not going to tell you what it's like to see two ghosts go at it, because it's the same thing as if two people were to go at it. My mother or my grandmother, you wouldn't want to see them angry, dead or alive, let me tell you. Because there's been no horror movies about that yet, and it probably never will be, because there's no rating high enough for that one. But anyway, folks, I've been talking about this for a little while, and it is getting late, and I have some other things I got to do, not related to any of this, but I got my own work to do. But I did want to, you know, do this show. And again, thanks to my wife. Thank my wife for this one, because she thought it was important for me to share this with you guys, to tell you guys what it's really like, what this is really and what it's not. and to kind of answer those questions that people have always wanted to know, if you wanted to know it, and to reassure you to know that you don't. Yep. I mean, I can tell you guys more ghost stories at some other point, I guess, but I don't want to. Quick, I mean, I have 5-6 minutes, so I'll tell you some cute ones. I already told you one about, I told you the ones about how my kids are constantly not able to get away with anything because my mother and my grandmother will rat them out. But anyway, I think one of my first, when I was younger, my uncle had a dog. His name was Peter. It was a beagle. I'm a big animal lover, which is why why a lot of animals are pretty close, especially dogs and so forth. But I'm an animal lover. I love all animals. I love people in general. But anyway, but my uncle's dog, Peter, was an older dog. He was a beagle. And he lived to be like six. He lived to be like, I think it was 19 or 20, which in a dog, that's very old. And he was a good dog. And he was, you know, old, but he was, you know, it was a cute dog. It was fun. One of my fondest memories is my uncle used to feed him table scraps and the dog would beg, which I've never seen before when I was younger. I thought it was cute. And of course, he'd get in my bacon or whatever he was begging for. And my aunt or my uncle would yell at me for it. But anyway, that's just what the dog did. He was, you know, a dog. And I've always been a fond of animals anyway, so me and the dog got along well, and I pet him here and there. And I think something about petting a dog is comforting for you and the dog, I guess. And dogs, I think, or animals in general, often know when something's wrong. Kind of like me, I always have my intuition. I call it friendar. I think animals have that too. Anyway, Peter was getting older, and he developed leukemia, which is a canine leukemia, kind of a cancer. And I remember they gave him this horrible food, and they tried to prolong it as long as they could. The dog got sicker and sicker. My uncle didn't want the dog to die in the vet's hospital around doctors and anything like that. He wanted him to die at home where he should have been with my uncle. My uncle used to tell stories about when he was a puppy, he put him in his pocket. This dog was about 70 pounds overweight, maybe, even though it had cancer. It was a pretty big dog. But when it was, you know, getting towards the end of its life, you know, he weighed a little bit less, but he was still a big dog. He, you know, shook the ground when he walked. He had a lot of thickness to him. But my aunt and uncle lived in South Boston, and I lived in a suburb outside of, it was south of Boston. On weekends and holidays, I spend at my aunt and uncle's house. So, in other things, I'd be at my aunt and uncle's house. So, when I went to their house, I slept on the floor of their apartment there. They had a little mattress they put down. Right, the weekend that Peter, that was the name of the dog, had passed away, you know, it was sad. I wasn't there to say goodbye to him because I was at school, obviously. I was nine, maybe. Yeah, I was about nine when Peter died, I think. But, you know, I was sleeping on the floor one night, and my aunt and uncle went to bed very early, like very early and whatnot. And the dog would often sleep on the couch, which is over the thing. But then when I was going to bed, the dog would jump off the couch. When it was alive, would come off the couch and sleep at the bottom of my mattress on my feet to, you know, reassure me or whatever. Well, the dog had passed away that week, and I had known that because my aunt and uncle told me. My uncle buried him or whatever, and, you know, I felt bad or whatever. I never got to say goodbye to the dog that I was very fond of or whatever. And later that night, I was lying on the floor. I wasn't asleep yet because, again, I was insomniac. I had a hard time sleeping in general. As I was laying there, though, I heard the couch, and it was moving. It was like an older couch. You could hear the springs and stuff. And then I felt the thud on the floor, because remember, I'm on the floor. Whenever, if you're on that level, you can feel the ground. It was moving, kind of oddly enough, the same way it would move if Peter was there, but obviously Peter was not there. I knew this. Of course, this is also around the time I started realizing that I was seeing or feeling and dealing with dead people and dead things. I didn't know this really as much. I always thought they were all the same thing. I didn't know there was a difference. Of course, I knew what life and death was, but that's to say, whatever. Next thing I know, as I'm lying on the floor, I felt the dog lying on my feet, and I knew it was the dog. And I looked, I was going to look, and I realized it was the dog lying on my feet, and he was not there. I could feel him, the warmth of the dog on my leg, and I know he was not there. Anyway, folks, moral of the story is the dog said to say goodbye anyway, and I said goodbye, and that was the end of that. All right, folks, thanks for joining me on this very special show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll be back tomorrow with a very, very intense show, but epic. Thank you, and may all your dreams come true. Don't have any nightmares about any of this, because it's less to fear than you think. Thank you. May all your dreams come true. Peace, everybody.